thank Patrick for helping me get him to come here and share his experience, strength, and hope tonight. So without any further ado, Don, please come on up. Thank you.
I'm John, alcoholic. And more about that later. Let's see. Some of you I know, some of you I don't. The only person who remembers probably what I said is my sponsor, Ray, who's here tonight to keep me honest partway. Keith might have remembered, but that's so long ago, I can't remember. This is a strange disease, you know. Like you've heard before, I never had this disease till I had been coming in these rooms for a while. Because no bartender, no matter how drunk I was, ever told me I was an alcoholic. Nobody I bought drinks for told me I was an alcoholic. Even in the military, they didn't tell me I was an alcoholic, and I went to a psychiatrist to find out what was wrong to justify my drinking. He said, nothing's wrong? Oh, well, okay. I will try to get sober before the end of the night, but I have to be careful, because, see, if you hear my whole story, I'll probably discourage some of you. I'll never get sober, and that's after going to AA for a lot of years. So I suggest if you're new, you ignore that part of the story and hear something to keep stay here, okay, because it's a lot easier that way. It really is. I was born in Detroit, Michigan, one of the few white folks from that area now. I grew up and went through high school and university there. And it was kind of funny because at one time, you know, in grade school, it was a parochial grade school. Some of you have had that experience with the penguins. That's what we used to call them back then. And their yardsticks. And I actually thought of going to a seminary at one time. And then I went to a Jesuit high school, and that went out the window real quick. And I got a degree in mechanical engineering. Things were going good, the early 60s. And my sophomore year at university, sophomore junior year, everybody the first 2 years had to be in ROTC if you're an engineering student. They kept you out of the draft that way is what it was. And junior year, I kind of had to make a decision. And back then, you know, nobody had big paying jobs and made a lot of money. And these guys, the Navy program didn't sound too cool being a Marine. I was a little older then. But the Air Force offered me $27 a month if I went to the Advanced Corps. And I said, shit, that's beer and chips money. So I signed up. That and the Vietnam was starting to heat up then, and we had a thing that you don't have now called the draft. And for the neighborhood I was in, the white people got drafted. It wasn't all blacks, us whites got drafted. And I didn't register for 6 months late for my draft registration, so I was kind of the top of their list. So that's why I became an officer in the Air Force when I graduated. But, you know, I drank in high school, and I drank in college, but not daily. You know, I drank here and I drank there. I always liked to buzz on, and I drank because of the way I felt, the way it made me feel. I didn't drink at the time to hide emotional problems or overcome. I drank because I liked the way I felt. The problem became, over the years, I kept overshooting the mark. You know, initially you get to that nice buzzed feeling, and you don't have problems. But as it goes, if you're an alcoholic of my type, you kind of overshoot the mark. And you keep drinking to try to get back to the mark. And somehow it just doesn't quite work. So, in 68, the Air Force sent me to Germany instead of Vietnam. So I fought the Vietnam War in Germany. And it was tougher to some degree. There was pressure. People don't realize that was the height of the Cold War, too. And when you're in Germany, you're on the front line. You realize the Russians are 90 miles away on a beautiful Autobahn with 20 tank divisions sitting in East Germany at that time. You know, and I love Germany. I name it from as soon as I got off the plane because everybody drank, at least in my mind. Everybody in Germany drank. Believe me, it did. And The booze was cheap, you know, happy hour, you're getting double bourbons for a quarter or 50 cents, something. Hadn't even made the gas houses where you buy, it was 4 marks to a dollar, so I was equated the German mark to a quarter. For a quarter, you could buy a nice big schooner of beer, German beer, not the crap we drink here. And I drank daily over there for 3 years. The only exception was about a month and a half after I got there, I ended up in a waste spot in the hospital with severe mononucleosis. It was horrible because I couldn't drink, and they took my blood test. The only way they treat that is to keep you in the hospital for a couple of weeks and take blood samples. You know, so I thought they were checking my alcohol content, so you know, I didn't want to drink. And I didn't do it for a while after I got out, but once that was over with, I went right back to heavy drinking. And I could tell you horror stories, but see, I wasn't an alcoholic yet. I was just having minor difficulties with my drinking. Just the fact that I'd go to happy hour, and this, my first wife brought the kids over in 68, and had a nice little apartment halfway between Wiesbaden and Frankfurt. But the problem was I didn't change. I still went to happy hour at 4:30, and I still came home at 1:32 in the morning, see? Most people, normal drinkers, don't do that. And I couldn't understand them. Who in hell would want to go and have a couple of beers and go home? That's insane. I'm just feeling good at that time, you know. And I did this. She left, and that was all right, you know. Deserted me in enemy country. That kept me going. Yeah, that's how I look at it. More than my fault. What the hell? And I met my to-be second wife there. She's the one who introduced me to AA the first time. When I got out of the service in July of 71, I took a European out. I conned them in to let me do that. So I spent almost another year as a civilian in Germany. That was neat. Damn, that was fun, because I lived in a German apartment building, German area town. I walked out the steps down the side alley and into a gas house. I mean, it was perfect. And she acknowledged I might have a drinking problem and I should go to this A&A, maybe. So, I think in August of 71, I can't, sometime, it was summertime still, I went to my first A&A meeting, and let's see, I had to be 30 years old then. That's dating myself, but anyway. I was older than some of the kids that are in here. And, my attitude was, okay, I'll do this, get her off my back. So, and I share this for attitude reasons. I remember walking out, and I stopped at a gas house on the way. The meeting was on Lundy Air Station at the NCO Club, called the Rocker Club, okay? And I was a member because now I'm a civilian. NCO Clubs were fun. Anyway, especially overseas, they gave you gifts to pay the dues. Patrick knows he's laughing at it, but that's true. You paid your $10 a month dues, and they probably gave you a $20 gift just, you know, because they had money out the gazoo. So I stopped at a gas house, had a couple of beers. The meeting was upstairs in this NCO club, so of course I went in the bar and had a couple of shooters. I walked in, opened the door, looked around a room like this and said, shit, when I get that old, I'll get serious about this crap. And that was, I didn't go back to AA for another 5-6 years, you know, because soon after that I got a job in the States. I came back and I went back to what I call periodic drinking at the time. I'm going to explain this more because it really wasn't, but I was able to control intervals and not get plastered and do stupid things for a while. But I moved to Victorville in 75, and about 77, I'm rough on this time frame. Again, with the second wife, I remember I was almost passed out in bed after one of my drinking bouts, and she decided maybe I should go back to A&A, and she called him up. Well, they wouldn't talk to her, so she shoved the phone in my hand. I'm drunk on my ass, and I don't want to talk. So I agreed to go to a goddamn meeting just to get her off my back. And shit, a half hour, two guys picked me up, dragged me to a meeting. I'm drunk on my ass, you know. But I did kind of get serious, you know. I would say I was an alcoholic, but in my mind, I had a drinking problem. And there's a world of difference, and I had that drinking problem for over 23 years going in and out of AA. because I could do two things. I couldn't quite get the powerless over alcohol. I just hadn't figured it out yet. See, and the book talks about that. It says things like, our hats are off to you. I worked on that for about 10 years in and out of here. You know, I was going to prove to you I could drink like a gentleman. And I spent another 10 years waiting for science to find a cure. Figure if I live long enough, they're going to give me the pill. It's in the book. It's in the book. That's why you buy the book, so you know these things. And then in 79, I'm backdating a little bit, but 1979, before I moved here in 80, the sponsor at the time, Bernie Murphy, God bless his soul, decided AA wasn't working and I need a treatment center. Hauled me over to Lancaster and put me in the care unit. And you know, that worked great for about 6 months. It really did. The only problem was I paid, or the insurance paid all this money for somebody to tell me I need the big book and go to AA. I've been going to AA, folks, idiots. You know, what the hell? I didn't need to pay all this money for you to tell me that. The other thing I remember with the treatment center is I had a room like this looking out there, and right across the street was this big cactus, neon cactus saying, liquor store. I just focused. Can't have it, but, you know. We have weird thinking if you're alcoholic like me, you know. We don't think like normal people. That's part of the problem. And that was, you know, and we do stupid things. You know, I was a man of good intentions. Before I went to that bar, I had good intentions. And after about the third drink, I forgot what the good intentions were. And bad things happened, you know. But I never had bad intentions, you know. And my wives just couldn't understand that. God bless their souls, wherever they are, you know. I remember my second wife had her hysterectomy. That's a true story. And I was in and out of AA at this time. And I was supposed to pick her up from the hospital. Only one problem. And Victorville wasn't that big. I was on a 3-day drunk. I forgot. I didn't go home either. I had a Volkswagen van. I just parked it on the desert and slept for a while. And went back down to the bar. Fortunately, my parents were staying with us. They picked her up and took her home. But yeah, that's what alcoholics do, folks. Or my type, the booze is more important than anything else when I'm drinking it, you know. Everything else, I have the fleeting thought that maybe I should be doing something. But it's very fleeting. The next drink takes care of that. And, you know, I moved here in 80, and I actually, and I hate to say this, in August of 80, I did get sober. And I stayed sober for almost 3 years in this town. Shit, I was speaking down in Ventura, and locally here, and I thought I was going to be a guru. Keith knows. Two things happened, okay? One, I kind of drifted out of the reality of today. I never quite grasped that concept anyway. And I kind of got, and I got a good job at Vandenberg, a promotion, very excellent job, high ratings, unfortunately, that job came with a lot of travel. And I lasted the first trip. Because I was out of town. It was up in Palo Alto. And I forget what the programmer meeting even was, but I knew that nobody would know. So that's when I started up again, about 83, 84, around there. And I got away with it for a while, quite a while. I drank on my trips out of town. Then I wouldn't drink on the flight back, and I go to meetings here. Now, that's a hell of a way to live your life, but that's the insanity of alcoholism. But then little things started to happen, like I'd forget I wasn't supposed to drink on the way back. I remember I lived, I'm still telling myself I'm not really an alcoholic. It's just bad luck and bad karma and all this bad shit, and if she'd let me drink like I want to, I'd be all right, you know, the old thing would be. And I remember one time I flew back into Samory Airport. I lived right across the street from the airport, quarter mile. And I couldn't find my car in the airport parking lot. Well, that was my excuse. I really couldn't. Forgot where I parked it. So I did what any logical alcoholic does. I walked to the rest and booked a room. I didn't go call home. Drunk in my ass. I stayed there overnight. So that's the type of odd behavior I exhibited. So And you know, you'd think I'd learn, but no. 1990, she announced I'm 91. And I was struggling in and out of this place, couldn't stay sober, you know, for limited periods of time. And 91, she decided that she was going to divorce me. Well, unfortunately, at the same time, they were pulling my security clearance at the base. They were going through that investigation. So I'm not drinking that much, but I really went off the deep end. I mean, I think I was probably certifiably nuts if anybody taken the trouble to find out. But, you know, us alcoholics got pride, man. Mm-hmm. You know, what I should have done, what I did, were worlds apart. And God, I started disappearing to Victorville on weekends and just spending money that I didn't have. Yeah, I went ballistic. I drank some, and sometimes I didn't drink. And finally, it got so bad that some of my stupidity, I ended up in the house I wasn't supposed to be in, violating a restraining order, and did a 30-day tour of county jail. This happened after, because of that security clearance getting pulled, man, I couldn't take working out there. I just walked in and quit my job, 5 years from retirement. Brilliant. In my head, you know, I was totally nuts. And that was 91. Now, you'd think I'd learned something was wrong, but, yeah. After that's when I got in this little deal and did my little tour in Santa Barbara County Jail. And thank God I had some money on me, because when I got back, you know, back then they kick you out at like 2 in the morning. They're real cute down there. Try getting a ride at 2 in the morning on Turk Bank Avenue, which everybody knows is next to the county jail, you know. And they don't care how you get back up here. They're very uncaring people. But I did eventually. Actually, I did get back up here, and first thing I did was stop down here in the bar, have a couple drinks. Shit, I didn't know what else to do. That started my real slide into about 8-9 years of total insanity. I mean, I was one of those that had to lose everything. I'd already lost the house and all that crap and the job, but that wasn't enough. I still couldn't give up this idea that it wasn't my fault. So I finally ended up staying over here in the armory in the winter, being on the streets, flying signs. And, you know, everybody knew I was an alcoholic. You could see me in the 90s. I'd be out here at 101 and Main Street flying a sign. You know, I didn't give a shit. I just wanted to, all I wanted to do was get enough money to go buy a pint of vodka and cigarettes. I was good for the day. You know, I drank for that period of time because I had a drink. It was no longer, the booze didn't work, I knew it didn't work, but I knew I'd die if I didn't drink. That's how my head worked. And towards the end of that, I got violently ill on vodka, and the guy I was kind of running with said, let's go to Reno. I said, okay. ain't working here, you know. Blow this ugly town on my butthole. And so we hitchhiked to Reno and got stuck in Paso Robles for about 2 months. Flying signs in the Albertson parking lot. That wasn't a bad gig, you know. You know, when you're flying a sign, you got to have vodka in you to do it. Believe me. No sane person would do that, you know. And the funny part is, even today when I drive by somebody flying a sign, I critique them. Okay? Because there's an art. There's an art. You got to have the right lamp. You got to kind of look homeless. You got to have a bag, you got to have your props, you know, you got to do it the right way. It's a lot of work, it's a lot of damn work, you know. But it was a lot cheaper than working for labor, Eddie, because I did that too, and that damn it killed me. Found flying a sign was a lot, I didn't have to work the hours, and it was a lot easier on me. Anyway, I get up to Reno with this guy, and we get screwing around, something happened, and we ended up sleeping in what I call a swamp. It's kind of like a swampy area beneath the freeway out in the south side of Reno, downtown Carson City. And I'd gone to the VA a few times because I got a card once in the 90s. And, you know, I never thought of using VA. Never thought I was beneath my dignity. And people who went to VA died. You know, that was in my head. That's the truth. And They didn't tell you much about VA when you got out of the service, so. So back in 2002, yeah, in June, I went in the VA there. He split, I went in the VA, and I was sick enough that I went in and asked them to detox me, and they took me in. Unfortunately, they only detox you for 3 days in there now. They got smart to it. They don't run 30-day programs. 3 days, you're sober enough, get your ass up. But they put me up in a halfway house for a while, and while I was in that hospital, I kept hearing about this place in Oregon, White City, and I said, I'm doing nothing else. That sounds cool. So I managed to get accepted there. They paid the bus fare. And what it was at that time in 2002 was a VA domiciliary. And they had different sections. They had a section for older guys. They had a section for alcoholic drug addicts, for homeless, for this. They had about 5-6 sections in there for different people. Luckily for me, for some reason, they didn't put me in the alcoholic section. They put me in with the older guys. And man, that was cool. I didn't drink, you know, but I could didn't have to check out to go to town or anything. You know, it's like free pass. And but I did good there. I got sober. I stayed sober I was there almost 2 years before I came back down here in 2004. And I didn't have a drink. And I got here and didn't have a drink, but I found one thing out. Alcoholic thinking again. I found out that Reno had a senior housing program. Okay? And I'm thinking, well, that if I get that, you know, I can go live in Reno because I got sober there. I knew where the meetings were. You know, that's my alcoholic thinking. And I did get that in August of 2004. And I got on the bus to Reno. And I did real good till I got off the bus in Reno. Today, I don't understand it. I got off the bus, walked in the nearest liquor store, bought a pint of six-pack, checked in a hotel. And how that next day that guy ever rented me an apartment, I'll never know because I was drunk in my ass. I couldn't hardly stand up, the senior housing guy. And that was the last bit from there till the next April was the last bit of my insanity because I didn't drink a lot. And I went to the Reno, original Reno AA called the Dryers Club. I even chaired meetings there. But then I'd drink. And by the time April 2005 came around, I was living off Wheaties and Steel Reserve. That's the only food I had. The apartment I owed 3 months back rent. The utilities have been turned off. If you don't know what that like, Reno's pretty damn cold in April. And I'm in this apartment, no utilities, no heat. Peeking through the blinds, you know the old picture? Because the landlord's obviously looking for his money, you know. So, oh, Jesus. Horrible way to live. Totally nuts. And what happened was a true miracle. And because I could, all those times I could get sober, I could not stay sober. And as best I can tell, it was the 27th of April, 2005. And I thought it was a Monday. It might have been another day, but a little vague. But I had finished my last beer the night before, and I got up that morning, and I was going to either hitchhike back to California, because I understood the streets in California, and Reno is not a place you really want to be out in the streets in. Really, it's a rough time. Or I was going to check in the VA hospital. I didn't know which. I said, okay, God, your choice, and I walked out the door. Fortunately, I ended up in the VA hospital one last time. They took me in, detoxed me, put me in a halfway house for two, 3 weeks, and I got back in up to White City. But that time the place had changed. It became strictly a drug and rehab center, and you had to go through their program. But somewhere in those first 3, 4, 5 days, somewhere in that first time in that Reno hospital, before I got to White City, the obsession was gone. I don't understand it. Had nothing to do with me. That higher power finally took pity on my poor soul, and the obsession was gone. I have not had a drink from that date till today, which is coming up on 9 years this April. And for those that knew me back in the 80s and 90s, that's truly a miracle, because I was incapable of staying sober by myself. I just couldn't do it. Now I don't even think of picking up a drink. I really don't. I'm around booze. There's booze in the house I live in. You know, I don't go to bars. I don't go to parties. But there's a couple of realities I'd like to get into here. See, I never heard about slips. Well, slips I heard about when I first came around. My sponsor explained that one to me real easily way back in the 70s. He'd never seen anybody slip on a banana peel and a fifth of bourbon poured on his throat yet. So he cut that excuse off, but rehab was great. That cure you. First time I heard about relapses. In White City, relapses. If you're an alcoholic like my time, when I first heard about relapses, my first thought was, I got to have one of those. I had a relapse. Hey, what the hell, you know? Justify my drinking one more time, you know? And that's all bullshit. I'm here to tell you, all that shit's bullshit. If you're in to tell me you had a relapse, I'm going to tell you you're full of crap. You got thirsty is what happened to you, and it's that simple. I got thirsty and decided to drink. You know, you can make any excuse for it you want, but that's what it is. The other thing I could never do was figure out a day at a time. I just couldn't do it until I got sober the last time. I'm going to steal my sponsor's line, and it's not his line. He read it in the book, but I heard it last night or the other day, and it really identified what my problem was for years. I was either 49% in yesterday or 49% tomorrow. I was never more than a couple of percent in the day. And that scale may change, but the 2% didn't. And that's why I couldn't stay sober. I was either dwelling in the past, which if I did that today, I'd get drunk. I was out there in the future that hadn't happened yet. And that's just as dangerous, you know. So I finally figured out how to live in the day. And that's truly a miracle, truly a miracle. And the other thing I figured out was my realities and reality are two worlds apart. See, my reality was I wanted to drink normally. And that sounds great, doesn't it? Just drink normally. God damn. But the problem was my definition of normal drinking is insane. My idea of normal drinking is drink as much as I want, as long as I want, with no side effects. Now that's insanity by definition. That's not normal drinking. That's not the half a glass of beer and I've had too much yet. You know, I don't understand that today. It'll come to me in a minute. You get old, you get memory loss occasionally. Oh, the other thing is I truly believe today, after having been sober a while, that I was an alcoholic from the first drink. And the reason I say that is a guy in Medford, Oregon a number of years back used to always say, and I identified with it, if I had one, I had to have more. Okay, and I did identify with that. The part I forgot about was, okay, early on, and for quite a bit of my drinking, yes, if I had one, I had to have more. But when I couldn't have one, I was thinking about the next time I could have one. Okay, I might not be drinking, but I knew next time I was going to pick up a drink. See, that's the part I left out. So I wasn't periodic. I was just able for a while to go periods of time without having more because I knew when I could have another little bout. But whenever I picked up a drink, I always wanted more. I have to have more. If I picked up one out of here and over to Shaw's and took a drink, I'd have to have more. And I might get by with one tonight, and I might get by with two tomorrow night. But eventually, I'd be off and running. And I couldn't tell you when that happened. I just guarantee it happened. And then I'd be back here. I slept back in this alley for a while. So, yeah, I'd be in one of them places if I lived. And I don't have to do that behavior or today. And I've been able to deal with things in sobriety. I used to dream about being seriously ill when I was drinking, okay? Because you go in a bar and really get free drinks and justify your shit over that, you know. That's the insanity we dream of. Today I do have a serious illness. I don't think of drinking, it's just today. Yeah, you know, and I'll share this because you can walk through anything in sobriety a day at a time. I heard this crap years ago and couldn't get it. Now I'm living it. last April when I turned 8 years old. Sponsor and I, we were out at Salmang where I got my chip. I think it's around the same time I found out I had lung cancer. You know, serious illness. And I've been able to walk through that since then, day at a time. One time I would have justified that with being in the barn. God, I'm dying. Ray let me die for 5 minutes, and then I had to get on with life. That's just the way it is in this program, you know. I don't know what tomorrow or next month's going to bring, you know. I'll find out in April, or I'll find out this month a little more where I stand, but, you know, whatever it turns out to be, it's okay. It's not my, it's nothing. I do the footwork. My higher power is going to take care of it one way or the other. If it's my time, it's my time. If it's not my time, I'll be around. Because, see, I truly believe in sobriety that there's something I have to do. That's why I'm still living. That's the good news. Bad news is I'll probably never know what it is I have to do. You know, when I do it, there's not going to be a trumpet sound saying, hey, you're done now. You know? So we keep plugging along in this deal. All I can do, you know, I do daily prayer meditation. I do it if I wake up at 3 in the morning or 7 in the morning. It's just a habit I've had for the last 8 years, 9 months, and so many days. And the only thing I pray for myself is another day sobriety. Other than that, I don't pray for myself because it doesn't work. I won't say I haven't tried it, but it just doesn't work for me, you know. I also gave up on trying to win the lottery. That's not going to happen. You know, and I know why. I understand that. My higher power is not that dumb. Because he knows if I won the lottery, the first thing I'm going to do is go to Vegas or Reno, get a 300,000 line of credit, and the party's on. So he's not going to put me in that position, you know. Because I'm not normal. See, even today, with over 8 years of sobriety, I'm not normal. I'm just in recovery. Okay? I still have the self-centered asshole in me that surfaces from time to time. Maybe daily, if you talk to my landlady, I don't know. But it's better. You know, it's not as bad as it once was. You know, I still have all those defects of character. They didn't, you know, we pray that God will remove them in one of the steps, but it doesn't say when. You know, so it's these are all works in progress, you know. If you're not paying attention, it's always good to work the 12 steps. But if you pay attention to step 12, it tells you you got to continue to work the 12 steps on a daily basis to the best of your ability. So you don't go through 12 and say, I graduated, now I'll go on to, you know, whatever we go on to. What we go on to is getting drunk if you graduate from here. Only one way to graduate from here, that's 6 foot under without drinking alcohol. You know, that's the only way you graduate from this program. So get used to it. I come to meetings. Why do we come to meetings? You know, well, reason I come, I can't speak for anybody else. I come in here because I don't ever want to forget what it used to be like. So I need the newcomers and the ones who went out and came back. You remind me of what I used to be like and what I'm doing here. Even the old timers, they remind me that I'm never going to be cured. They're still showing their defects of character with 30-some years sobriety, you know. So it shows me this is a work in progress, you know. This program is always a work in progress. Each day I do a little bit, one step forward, two back, but, you know, I'm here. And I didn't used to be here. I used to get graduated a lot, you know. I could memorize a big book, quote your chapter and verse, say this is how you got to do it. That's all bullshit. You get a copy of that book. You read the black and white. Don't invent words, because we all do. You know. And if you don't believe me, sit down with your sponsor and start reading the book. You'd be amazed how many words you make up that aren't in there. I've done it. Ray's done it. You know. It's real interesting to do that sometimes. You know, you read things that aren't there. But you read it and you find your program, not somebody else's, you know. I suggest you get a sponsor. Maybe it's a good friend. I don't care what term you use, but you need somebody you can share one-on-one with, okay? You really do, because, you know, we share in here in a general way. If you need to unload personal stuff, like you killed somebody or whatever it might be that could get you in trouble, you need somebody to go one-on-one with who's not going to turn you in for the reward money. You share it in here, you don't know who's in this room. Okay? It's a word of caution. We don't know who's in this room. Might be a police officer sitting in here. I say I killed somebody in Germany 40 years ago, he might have to arrest me. I don't know. I didn't do that, but, you know. But it has happened in AA meetings. Believe me. That shit does happen, so be careful. You know, a word of caution to the newcomers and even the old-timers. Says we share in a general way, you know. And I share mainly... See, I never did drugs, so don't share about that. The other reason I don't is because this is Alcoholics Anonymous. And we stick to the one thing we know about. There's other programs for the other stuff. You know, you might share a little bit if that's part of your problem, but I get highly upset when I sit in AA meetings and somebody does a drug along. You know, that's not what I'm here for. You know, that's not what the program's about. I dress up like this when I speak for respect for the program. Okay? And if I and to show other people, hey, when you speak, this is what we do. Okay? Somebody's got to tell you. I didn't know what I was doing when I first got here. People told me. Fortunately, depending on your viewpoint, back when I came in here, they told you real clear, sit down, shut up, you don't have anything we want to hear. You know, we'll tell you when you can speak. Maybe a year in your case. That's the way they were. And they weren't totally wrong. Because back then we went out for coffee a lot. I realize we don't do it as much now. And they would listen to your bullshit when you're over coffee. But they didn't want to hear it in the meeting. You know, and they're right. You know, even this last time, I've been around AA for years. And when I came in back into 2005, I didn't know anything. You know, I didn't have anything to share. You know, I had to sit and listen like a newcomer. I had to start all over again. And that's the hardest part of coming back in here. If you're somebody who's had to go out a few times, or more than a few times, it doesn't matter. When you come back in here, you have to start from square one again. You have to start in that blank page. Mm-hmm. You have to put aside everything you might have heard in here before, because obviously you didn't hear the right things, and start back from square one. And that's very difficult to do if you've been around here. I mean, hell, I'd have longevity if they gave out chips for membership. I might bring that up to central office. That's a good idea. Unfortunately, they don't do that, you know. And all that. I look at all the time I was in and out here is probably why I'm alive today. Okay? Because all the time I was in here, at least I wasn't drinking. You know, if I'd been drinking all those years, I wouldn't have made it to here. But I don't recommend that to anybody, because it's so much easier to keep what you got. My example is, the book is true, you're going to lose everything if you live long enough if you keep drinking. And that's totally true. You do. You do. The booze takes everything. You know? It's your best buddy when you start, and your worst enemy when you finish. And you can't stop. By myself, I'm incapable of not drinking. If I picked up a drink today, I'd be incapable of stopping again. So something happened. That's my experience every time I went out. You know, I could not stop till something happened, either physically or locked up or, you know, totally sick, something had to happen. And money was never the object. That's one thing we're good at as alcoholics. We can always find money for booze. You know, if we're stone broke, we can always find booze, you know. We're not as bad as the druggies. We don't rob people and mug them necessarily, but we always mind to find a bottle somewhere. And that's just my observation. No offense to the druggies, but, you know, I'm not one, just my observation. But, you know, today's life's good. I don't have anything. I don't have a vehicle. I have to walk or... have people help me out with rides occasionally. I'm going through a serious medical condition. But, you know, life's good. I've got that little bit of peace of mind on a daily basis. I never had that in my life before. Never. You know, and It's okay. My higher power provides what I need. He does. As long as I stay sober and don't pick up a drink, he provides what I need on a daily basis. Not what I want. You know, not what I want. But he does provide what I need. Almost 9 years I've been sober. I haven't had to sleep under a bush yet. I haven't had to miss a meal. A lot of things that I was missing before I got sober. So, you know, and as long as I keep it in the day, I'm going to, as far as I know, I haven't been to sleep in the night, you know. You never know, stuff changes, but yeah. You know, I've been kicked out before. By better than you. You know, that's, I got a little time left, so I'll just tell some funny stories about my drinking, because I like to say that to last rather than sun speakers, because I want to distract people, you know. The drunk logs, I'm not a funny, I'm just telling what happened to me. Once when I was in Germany, I remember this very well. Just an example of the insanity of booze. I remember my first wife coming over, and I shipped, I'm one of the few guys who shipped a Volkswagen to Germany. That showed me. Great thinking. True. So she comes over, yeah. She comes over, I get the car, and I'm running out in this little town of Rudisheim, and she's in an apartment with three kids, but I'm a Herr Hauptmann, you know, so I go to happy hour at this little annex old club we had in the BOQ there, the American Arms. It might still be there, I don't know, and see, to back this up first, when you first got over there, you could not bring your family immediately. You had to get a place to stay. So they put me up in this BOQ, 300-room BOQ, great place, called the American Arms. It's 2.5 blocks from downtown strip of Wiesbaden. It's you right down off the elevator is a little upstairs club annex bar, you know, got our own bar. You walk out the front door across the street, you're in a German bowling alley. You walk out the back door and across the parking lot, you're in a gas house. Ideal. If you're an alcoholic, you know, or anybody who likes to drink. So anyway, I was, true story, insanity. I go from the air station after work in my little Volkswagen, which is about that far. I think I might have stopped at the Amelia Earhart first. Probably did, knowing the normal routine. Had 5 or 6 doubles there and then wandered down to the Arms. This is my daily drinking in Germany when I didn't think I had a drinking problem. The next thing I remember, and I thought I'd parked in the front parking lot. There's 2 parking lots, the front one by the bowling alley, the back one of the building. So it's about 11 at night now, see, because I haven't made it home yet. And I go out looking for the car, and it ain't there. So my first brilliant thought is somebody stole my car. Do I call the police? Shit, that'd be dumb. I'm drunk. I'll take the train home. And I did. Brilliant, huh? I got in this little train commuter, the last one out to Rudisheim, and I remember getting on the train. The next thing I remember, the train's moving. Only problem is it's light out. It's pulling back into Wiesbaden. I slept out, passed out all the way out there, overnight, all the way back. And even worse, after I had to go back out and get the wife, the car's in the back parking lot. So, car wasn't stolen. I just forget. Had one of those blank moments we call blackouts. Can't remember where I put it. That's just one example of the type of insanity. I was doing this daily in Germany. I mean, I remember once we had a little switchboard in front of us. After she left, I permanently moved into this BOQ. Oh, yes. I don't know how I survived it. You know, I was doing this every day. You know, I was drinking doubles after work right through to 1-2 in the morning. At that time, if you were in the service and you could show up for work in uniform, nobody really said much. You know, so that's how I got away with it, basically, because I always showed up for work. I remember one night, I couldn't get in my room. I lost my key or some damn thing, or forgot where I put it. And I thought my girlfriend was up in the room, so I go to the switchboard and said, would you page you so-and-so's room? She did. Oh, she said, that's normal. Captain Skeleton often doesn't answer his page. Yeah. what can you say? Oops. And I was always doing that kind of crap, you know. And then when I got back here and continued drinking, it got even stranger, you know. I go to the bars in downtown Victorville, stop in for a beer after work, and end up coming home 2 days later. Normal, huh? I couldn't tell you where I've been. Yeah, I did. I knew what bar. See, I for years said I never had a blackout because I identified when I came around to AA the first time. People were talking about blackouts and how they, you know, start drinking in L.A. and ended up in Hawaii. That's what I heard. And I could tell you where I've been. I mean, even here when I drank it in San Maria, I could tell you I've been in Shaw's and I've been at the red carpet, you know. What I couldn't tell you is what I did there for 2-3 hours. Yeah, I'd imagine what told me I've been there. But see, I can never remember what I exactly did or who I was with. Yeah. And yeah, I've done the coyote ugly thing too on the travels, you know, good episode. You know, just, I've done a lot of things drinking, say, that I never would do normally. I've even had gals pick me up when I was drinking. That's how bad it got. Jesus. You know, my morality went right out the window. Yeah, totally. When I was drinking, I had no morality. I just did the self-centered things John wanted to do at the time. I did the good ideas at the time routine. And God help us all, good ideas at the time don't work very well. And even when I wasn't drinking, I'd have brilliant ideas. Like, that's why I kept going back out. My brilliant idea one time was I could go to Laughlin and get a job there. Now, why in the hell you go gambling time with the hands of booze, you know, and you're trying to stay sober? But it made sense at the time, you know. All these Reno things made sense at the time. You know, I never consulted anybody about it. I just, you know. And I found out back there 8 years ago that I was dealing with depression all my life. And that didn't make me an alcoholic. Might have made me over-treat the depression with alcohol, but it didn't make me an alcoholic. That's just a contributing factor, you know, and it's helped knowing that and dealing with it. So I also say that say if you have outside issues, there are doctors and other people out there that you can take those to. And you should. You should deal with those because probably one of the reasons I had trouble staying sober was this depression I didn't know I had. That kept me in the past quite a bit. These issues all need looked at. And the book tells you that. I'm not quoting something in my opinion. That's in the book that we did this. And today I don't have a depression problem. It's under control. I don't dwell on the past. My mood's at level. There's some side effects to that I don't care about, but that's all right. You know, it's like I tell the doctors, if he gave up booze and sex, why am I giving up cigarettes? That's all I got left, right? Yeah, that's alcoholic. We don't do anything very easily. You know? But today I at least listen to advice. Don't always follow it, but I listen. You know? I'm getting better. I didn't used to listen. I generally get around to doing what's good for me, you know. And, I'll eventually quit smoking because it's still a problem. Drinking's not a problem. That's the main thing, you know. The one thing I don't want to do is go back in that insanity. It's not about the drinking anymore. If you lived in that insanity for 8-9 years like I did towards the end, that's the bad part. That's the bad part, when you sober up and recognize just how nuts. And I'm not totally sane today, don't get the wrong idea, you know. I still have to run my brilliant ideas by my sponsor or somebody else because my brain don't work like normal people, you know. It just doesn't. I still have these brilliant ideas of what I should do for me. And most of them are rooted in what the book calls self-centeredness. Yeah, it's all about me, and those are when you get in trouble. You know, I truly believe that part in chapter 5 where it says the root of all our evils is self-centeredness. And you put names on it like ego, or it has many different names, fear, but it's all self-centered. You know, the only thing we're thinking about is ourself. And I have that problem today. I still do it. It's not to the degree I used to, but Yeah, you know, I still say, what's in it for me, or what do I get out of it? And I have to remember, that's my problem. I better start thinking of somebody else to do a little thing, you know. And I have all the tools, I just don't use them. I'm a good alcoholic. It says, write a gratitude list. Well, yeah, that's fine when everything's going good. When it's going to shit, who remembers that, you know? So you can hang around people and talk to people. See, that's the other thing that we hang around here. You are going to see something's wrong with me before I can see something's wrong with me. Okay? Because I won't admit to it. But if I'm not here, how are you going to see something's wrong with me? If I quit coming here for 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks, I might as well drink. Okay? Because I'm going to go back into that old way of thinking real quick. And I'm not immune. Years don't give me immunity. There's a couple of thoughts on that. One I believe is the old timers used to tell me years ago, the road gets narrower, which I truly believe it does. The things I could do the first year of sobriety, I can't do now. And I have to clean up all my acts. I've got to clean up my language, the way I dress, the things I do. I've got to work on it. You know, it's not just the drinking. It's a whole package deal. And I truly believe that. You won't hear it from a lot of people, but that's what I believe, you know. And I've seen it. I've seen it in people really working the program where you can see that happening, you know. They're cleaning up their act. You know, and being acceptable to myself. I never thought of, well, I thought of myself, but not in that way. You know, today I think of myself, well, what have you done right today? And some days I haven't done anything right. You know, it's just what I am. But at least I'm thinking about doing something right. You know, now it's a matter. And I don't care if it's picking up a piece of trash, holding a door at the grocery store for an older person or what it is. See, the hardest thing you have to do in this world is work this program outside of this room when you leave here tonight. I can work it great talking to you people. I can talk up a storm, tell you how great I am and everything else. But when I go home tonight, I got to be nice to my landlady when she insults me, or I perceive an insult, you know. Maybe that's a better way of putting it, you know. I perceive a lot of things, and it's not always true. But, you know, or dealing with some idiot at the grocery store, or, you know, not taking offense, that's the hard part, okay, because that's not my nature. So, with that, I'm going to shut up, and I hope everybody stays sober tonight.
Great. Let's have another round of applause for John, please. Okay. All right. So I would like to...